Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
I looked around at all of these faces and I thought, I know people that could love them, give them a home and teach them about Jesus. I wanted to race home and like almost shake people like, do you know there are children across the ocean? They need you.
Everybody has a story and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope,
and power.
And power. It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We are not.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When Kathy Garrison got married, her dream for her life was pretty simple. Her husband would get a good job, they'd buy a house, have some kids. That would make her happy and fulfilled and safe. But safe and simple was not what God had in mind for her family. When she experienced a devastating loss, God changed Kathy's perspective on life. She'd always longed for a purpose, and God began to show her that his purpose was way out beyond safe and simple. It would take a giant leap of faith. This is Chapter 9 of Epic, Kathy Garrison's story.
So Nathan and I got married. I was still in college when we got married. And I think that my vision or my dream for our life was, you know, I wanted for us to finish school and he was going to get a good job and we were going to buy a house and have some kids and live happily ever after. And that would be our life. And it would be happy and fulfilled and safe and good. And then he graduated school and we did. We kind of began that life that I had envisioned. It took us a little while to conceive our first child, and then we were hit by a drunk driver. And so we lost our first pregnancy, and that was a really difficult thing. And I remember kind of crying in the carpet and thinking, why doesn't anybody talk about this? But life kind of went on. We had Haley. We called her the fairy tale baby. You know, she was like this, would sit in this bouncy seat and just... I mean, she was on a schedule. She was like one of those dream babies. So you just want to do it again right away.
Sure.
And so we did. And I became pregnant when she was 5 months old. We were pregnant with twins and they were born at 30 weeks, Hayden and Nathaniel. And Hayden, who is 20 years old now, we have the privilege of parenting and loving here on earth. But Nathaniel passed away at birth. And so we had an almost 11 month old at home. She wasn't even 11 months old yet. And a child in the NICU and a child that we were grieving. I just remember feeling like my heart doesn't know what to feel right now because I was longing for this. I mean, Haley was a baby. She wasn't even a year old and I longed to be home with her and I was worried sick for Hayden who was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. He was 2 pounds, 10 ounces. He did pretty well, but I was just a mess.
So
I wanted to be with him. And then I think, to be honest, in those first months, my husband and I grieved very differently. So he kind of dove into his grief and it was very real and palpable for him and probably healthier. We just processed it differently. And I think that I just kind of tried to pull myself up by the boots and we've got it. Do this. We've got to advocate for this child in the hospital. We have to spend time with this one. And yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot to deal with. But through all of that, I feel like that was a really pivotal point in my faith. Now, I was a strong believer before this. It's not that I wasn't, but God became so real to me because when loss and grief comes, he meets you there. And so that's what I really discovered. And that was really a faith building time for me. It was obviously difficult and not something that anybody wishes for.
Right.
But the blessing of it was that I feel like it built the foundation of my faith and I trusted him differently. And I knew that he was faithful and I knew that he showed up and I knew that he healed and redeemed. And it was personal. It was an experience that I carried with me and that just taught me really more about who he was. I've always had a longing for purpose in my life. Anyway, I remember being a little girl and kind of wondering like how we can make a difference and what my part was to play. And I have always processed those things or thought about those things. But when you have lost, I think a child in particular, I think any of us that have a loss would say that it does give us a different perspective. You know, mm-hmm. our days here are numbered, and mm-hmm. it goes fast. And what are you going to do with your days? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to live in a way that, not that I feel like I'm earning anything, because I'm absolutely not. There's nothing I could do to earn grace and salvation. But I do want to be purposeful with the days that he's given me, so that I get to the end of my life and I look back and I can say that I did my best to use what he gave me well. Mm-hmm.
As you began to move through life, then, mm-hmm. so you had Haley first, mm-hmm. Hayden,
yep. And then Emma. Yeah, Emma came along a couple of years later. And I would say, other than, you know, kind of working through that grief and processing what that was, you know, our life went on kind of as planned. You know, we had these three little ones. My husband had a steady job. I stayed home with the kids. But I really did begin to, I would say that I wasn't left the same after that loss with that different perspective. And so I really mm-hmm. did begin to wrestle even more so with purpose. So that safe and stable life, I guess, didn't feel like enough anymore. And it created a discontent in me that wasn't about not being happy with what I had, materially mm-hmm. speaking. It was about a wrestling of what else does God want for me and in our lives.
And did you have a sense that he was... But did yeah. you have a sense that he was nudging you towards something?
I did. Okay. I did. And at first I didn't know what it was. And I remember at the time I was leading a Bible study. So this is when all three kids are pretty little. And I remember my prayer request at the beginning of that year and continued throughout the year was that God would do something so big in my life that other people would have to know that it was because of him and for his glory and by his power. And I had no idea what that was. That was the first time that international adoption began to stir in my heart. I remember one day, at this point, Emma's probably four. So our kids are probably 4, 6, and 7. And I had, without telling my husband, I had sent away for a packet from an international adoption agency. And it came with a DVD in there, and it was Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Yes.
And I remember he was, you know, was on the beach, and he's playing the grand piano when Love Takes You In, and his, you know, Chinese daughter is running up and down, you know, the yes. beach in the waves. And I just sobbed, because it was full of scripture about what God says about caring for the orphan and what his heart is for the vulnerable and how we as believers are to respond. And I was so full of purpose as I watched that. I was sure that he was going to feel exactly the same way. And so when he got home from work that day with no warning, I grabbed him by the hand and put him on the couch. And I said, honey, I have to show you something. And I played the DVD, and my husband is an amazing man, and he's a strong believer, and he cares about people. But I mean, you can imagine, for him, he's just gotten home from work. He has no idea what's coming. Yeah. And I sit him down and put him in front of this DVD. And again, I'm sitting there sobbing, and he's looking like, what happening right now? And it gets done, and I turn to him kind of with this expectant look, you know, when he says to me, honey, I love that you care about people, but we don't have the money to do this. Like, this is not probably for us. And then after a quiet moment, I think he said something profound like, what's for dinner? You know, I mean, it was just kind of like conversation over. And I was crushed, because I was sure that I had found what it was that God had for us. Now, I mean, it would have been nice if I would have given my husband a little warning.
A little build up,
that.
Maybe.
Yeah, a little build up would have been good.
So was that end of conversation for that point?
You know, in an uncharacteristic move on my part, I actually kind of shut my mouth about it, because I felt I didn't have an answer for some of his concerns. I didn't know how all of that would work out. And so I actually went back to teaching once all of our three kids were in elementary school. I went and taught at the Christian school where they go. And we all went to school together for several years. And looking back, you know, it's funny, I can see how God placed me there just for his purposes at that time too. We were surrounded by international adoption. We also had an experience at the time I taught with my best friend, and her family struggled through some really difficult things. And in time, her four children came to stay with us for a while.
Wow.
And so I was teaching full time, and I had these 7 kids and loved them all like my own. I was happy to have them, but a little overwhelmed maybe too. And that was another kind of lesson in trusting God. And I know that God used that situation, you know, maybe for their good too at the time. But I also know that he was teaching our family something. He was teaching us that we could all work together as a family unit to love children that weren't maybe brought to our family by birth. When those kids left our home, there was, again, I was back to this kind of wrestling of purpose. And Lord, what are you trying to tell me? What is it you want to do? You know, it's funny. God just showed up in all of the most unexpected ways. As I was kind of praying through this, and international adoption is coming back to me at this point, and that kept coming back up. I kind of just told God, like, listen, like, I think it's a great idea, but it doesn't work for us for all of these, you know, different reasons. And if you know our two older girls, they are not alike, didn't have a lot of the same ideas or personality or interests. And in 1 week's time period, one of them came to me and said, Mom, I think we're supposed to take care of kids in Africa. And I was like, well, that is interesting. And then the other one, who was really not our risk taker, came and said, Mom, I think I'm supposed to be a missionary to kids in Africa. And I'm thinking, they hadn't been together. They hadn't talked about it. And then in a funny twist of fate, I suppose God has a sense of humor. I needed a root canal that week. So I had some time off work. And I remember picking a book up on tape with the idea that I would listen to it during the procedure. Of course, that didn't end up happening, but I did listen to it. And it was a book called Dangerous Surrender by Kay Warren. And the entire book is about living a life of risk and living a life of dangerous surrender, of giving it all to God, of laying it all down, of letting him do what he wants with your life. And the storyline all had to do with orphans in Africa. It wasn't coincident. It was one of those, like, you're just being bombarded. You just know it's not all coincidence. Mm-hmm. And I was so emotional that week. I remember sitting down. I actually wrote my husband a letter, which seems like a crazy thing to do when you live in the same house. And I just said, listen, I understand all of the reasons this doesn't work. I understand that we don't know where the money would come from. We don't know what happened with my job. I don't know how it's going to affect the kids that we have now or what we're inviting into our home. But this is what I do know. I know that there are, the number that was thrown around at that time was 147 million orphans. And I also have been reading and been discovering what God's word says our response as believers is supposed to be to them. And I also know that I don't see anywhere in scripture that it calls us to live a safe and guarded life. So I'm just laying this out for you, and I'm just asking you to pray. I don't even want to discuss it right now. I was a mess, actually, at the time. Just so, just so full of emotion about the whole thing. And he read the letter, and he brought it to me, and he just promised to pray. And that was on a Saturday night. And by just a few days later, he came to me, and he said, you know, do you still have that DVD that we watched years before? And I did. I said, yeah. And he said, well, if we're going to do this, don't you think we should probably show the kids? And I couldn't believe it was happening.
It was really happening. The Garrisons were about to leave Safe and Simple behind and set out on a journey of international adoption. They thought adopting a child was going to be their big leap of faith. It turned out it was only the beginning. That's coming up on part two of Epic. I'm so grateful you're listening to Epic today. If you can't stick around for the end of the show, catch the podcast on our website and tell us about your story at myfaithradio.com. And now, part two of Kathy Garrison's story.
He read the letter and he brought it to me, and he just promised to pray. And that was on a Saturday night. And by just a few days later, he came to me and he said, you know, do you still have that DVD that we watched years before? And I did. I said, yeah. And he said, well, if we're going to do this, don't you think we should probably show the kids? And I couldn't believe it was happening. But I knew that God was working on his heart the way that he was working on mine. And so we sat down and put the DVD on. And it was so interesting because all three of our kids were not only on board, but excited. And Emma, our youngest at the time, said to us, she said, Mom, I just have one question. Can we adopt from Africa? And I that's where I had been feeling led to. That was her comment the week before, mm-hmm. you know, that about taking care of kids in Africa. And I just felt like God was aligning our hearts. And that felt like, you know, just a taste of his goodness to mm-hmm. us. We decided to adopt one child. That time, that was our first adoption. And it felt scary. I mean, we really started with, we weren't afraid about bringing a child into our home. It was more, it just felt so big because it changed so much in our life. Yeah. And we didn't really know, I mean, the finances really tripped us up. But, you know, I feel like every time you step out to do something bold and big for God and he shows up, it grows your faith and it proves him faithful. And not only do you get to experience that and you get to see it, but the people around you do as well.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happened with our first adoption. He provided every penny through lots of different, you know, donations and fundraisers and savings on our part and tax returns. And he pieced it all together. And so then in August of 2009, we brought Elijah home from Ethiopia. So Nathan and I traveled in August.
And how old was Elijah?
Elijah was 7 months old when
oh
he
my,
came home.
Baby.
Yeah. He was a baby. Yeah. And the backstory on that a little bit is that I kind of laugh at ourselves now a little bit. But at the time, we thought that we were really doing the responsible thing because we thought that that was the safer option, that if we go and bring
a younger child,
yep,
meaning
if we go and bring a younger child home, we have a, you know, we have more of an opportunity to influence their life. Mm-hmm. And we were really at that point, we were afraid. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Yeah. We were afraid.
Yeah.
And we thought bringing home an older child might more disrupt our older kids' lives. And, you know, I mean,
yes.
So here we are still kind of saying, yes, God, we're going to do this, you know, big, bold thing for you. But we kind of want to control it a little bit because we really want to do the safest, you know, I guess the firstborn child in both of us kind of thought that was like the responsible thing to do. And we're
yeah.
glad that we did because it led us to Elijah and he is our son and,
yeah.
you know, we adore him. And during the time that we were in Ethiopia, we spent a week there. And one of the things that they do when you're in Ethiopia is that they take you around to visit different orphanages. So just being in the culture in general and seeing poverty up close and personal and in a way that really neither one of us had experienced. So it was challenging and difficult to see that up front. And then you take us into the doors of an orphanage and I looked around at all of these faces and I thought, I know people that could take these babies. I know people that could love them, give them a home and teach them about Jesus. And I wanted to race home and like almost shake people like, do you know there are children across the ocean? They need you. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to know about Jesus. They need to, you know, have their needs met. And, you know, at the third orphanage that we visited, we walked in and mm-hmm. this one was cold concrete, nothing for the kids to play with. It smelled of urine and the kids were quiet. That's the thing I remember. The kids were quiet and that's, you know, not a good sign. They had stopped, you know, crying out to have their needs met. You know, it was a different feel there. It felt dark.
Yeah.
It felt dark. And there was a little girl and we were guessing she hadn't been there very long because she was still kind of spunky, you know, and full of life. And she attached herself to Nathan. She was about 3 years old. We learned that her name was Rakik. And she attached herself to Nathan the whole time we were there. And she's kind of running around his feet and she'd sit on his lap and with him everywhere that he went during this time. And so at the end of our visit, and she sensed that we were getting ready to leave and she just began to wail.
Oh.
She just sobbed and she laid her little body down in front of the only way in and out of this orphanage and just cried. And we all had to step over her to leave. And we got back on our bus with all the families that we were traveling with, and it was just completely quiet. Nobody knew what to say. And Nathan and I at the time did not even talk about it. But when we got back home, we did begin to talk about it. And we both had really felt like when we were in Ethiopia, we just really felt challenged that, you know, we live in a house with bedrooms and, you know, we're not perfect, but we have a family and we can love them. And most importantly, you know, point them to Jesus and we can do more. We can do more. And so initially in our second adoption, we really felt like we were going back, hopefully to bring her home. Now that's not usually the way international adoption works. And it's not the way Ethiopian adoption worked at the time that you know, would pick a child and then go after them. But because she was in an orphanage that our agency worked with, they were willing to look into that. And so they did. And after a couple of months of kind of doing some research and looking around, they came back to us and said that Rakik is not adoptable. her paperwork wasn't complete, and whatever her family circumstance was just dictated that she couldn't be brought home internationally. And that felt really confusing to me,
yeah,
because we felt like we loved her. You know, we,
yes,
felt like, you know, we didn't know her really,
yes,
very well, but we really felt like God had put her in our path for this purpose. And it seemed like it made sense. She needed a family. We had a family. We were willing. We were going to do this big thing. And that door kind of closed. And at the time, we just really didn't understand. But the thing that we did know and we both agreed upon was that God was still calling us to move forward for someone else. And so we did continue with the process of second adoption. And I remember sitting down with our social worker, and she asked us, you know, when you do adoption paperwork, a lot of times they will have you indicate what you're open to. It's not really like a request, like, oh, I only want a 3-year-old boy with this guy, you know, but mm-hmm, it's more like, are you open to this age range, this sex, whatever? And we just said, you know, we don't know, because we're not really doing this to fulfill a need in our family. We're,
yeah,
doing this to be used for whoever needs us. And I remember it was an afternoon in September, like a year after Elijah had been home. So in the next year, and I was standing in the kitchen, he was napping. My big kids were all at school, and the phone rang, and it was our adoption agency. And she said, so you know how you are kind of open-ended on your request for this adoption? She said, I have something that you might consider praying about. And she said, well, we just got a file for 3 siblings that we're trying, you know, that we'd like to place together.
Oh, wow.
And Meredith, I just remember literally like the room started to spin. I was like, okay, so Lord, like, okay, so can we talk about surrender? And at the same time that I'm feeling kind of overwhelmed, and she's telling me about these kids, and I'm thinking to myself, we have 4. That means we're going to have 7. I don't know how to parent 7 children. And,
yeah,
the Lord said, yes, you do. Not that I did, but that I could do it with his help. And I just remember knowing, even before I called Nathan, I knew exactly what he would say. And so we prayed about it. We both felt clear that we were to move forward. And kind of our agreement at that point was, we're just going to keep doing the next thing. I remember us praying and asking God that if it wasn't the right thing, mm-hmm, that he would just close the door, mm-hmm, that he would just, you know, stop us short of making a mistake, please. And he did not. And so then in February of 2011, we brought home Grace, Aaliyah, and Solomon. At the time, they were 6, 5, and 20 months.
Yeah. And what was that adjustment like?
It was crying in the carpet hard.
It
was really hard. Yeah. Not because we didn't love them fiercely. We did and do and always have. But when you invite 3 strangers into your home that have loss and trauma and don't speak your language, and you're playing charades for everything. And then I just remember one day sitting down with a couple of my older kids and just saying, I'm sorry I'm not doing this well. Like, I'm sorry that you need me, but they need me. And I remember at the time, it just felt like there were so many needs and it felt overwhelming. And it just felt like I wasn't doing a good job, mm, for any of them. Mm. And my oldest daughter said, she goes, Mom, I don't even know what you're talking about. So, you know, there was grace in that, at,
yeah,
least, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how long ago has that been now since that's
They've been home 7 years.
7 years.
7 years in February. About a year after those kids had been home, Nathan and I both again felt like God was telling us there was one more. And I literally remember sitting on my bed and journaling about this and writing out to God like, okay, so there are other people. There are
somebody else
that don't
could do
have
this?
7 children. People that haven't done this twice to bring 4 kids home. Like, it was not a sense of like not wanting to follow what God had for our family. It was more of like, I don't know how much more like I can physically do. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if I can do this and do it well, and wrestling with my own inadequacies, really. But I do, again, I remember hearing God whisper as I, you know, was writing all of this out and saying, you know, of course not audibly, but in my heart, I heard him say to me, I'm not talking to you about other people. I'm talking to you about you. Will you go? So we did. Samuel came home the next year. So they had been home a little more than 2 years. But
also
the time that he came home, all of our younger kids are Ethiopian.
Okay.
So he's also from Ethiopia.
How old was he when he
was not quite 2. Yeah, but we are blessed by him. We joke, we say that he's either going to make us old or keep us young. So we're hoping for the second. He is the life of the party at home. And so, you know, and we're so blessed by him. And what that kind of taught us was, is that God always knows better, even, you know, when it seems like the craziest of things to us. And it did. And it still does, really. I mean, he's been home for 5 years now. And, you know, it's hard and it's busy. And I feel like what we've done is that we've created a life that requires dependence on God in every way. God really did do something in our life so big that it had to be because of him. But we are blessed by them and by this journey that he's had for us, and I'm glad we didn't miss it.
Kathy said repeatedly, their family is not special. They're just like your family, and they often feel inadequate. But God has been faithful. Big thanks to Kathy for sharing her story today. You know, we believe everybody has a story. Share yours with us at myfaithradio.com. I'm so grateful to Jason Racco and Ted Ross for help with production. Our show's theme song was written by Stephen Johnson, and I'm your host, Meredith Foster. Join us next week for Epic. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.